Yeah, you make another very good point there, Eric. Traceable to the Bureau of Standards. Archival. Format. Protocol. Integrity. And what are we talking about here? Safety of altering, you know, mischief that could take place. There's only a zillion things to worry about here. George, can we meet you IKT? Go right ahead with your comment or your reference that you found.
Yeah, simply put, if anybody's familiar with the Wikipedia on the web, wikipedia.org, wiki/flash_memory has the really decent description of how flash memory works, and most of the SSD devices are based on flash. So I suggest you can go there for an explanation with nice pictures of how it works. Just another comment, too, is that one of my family's businesses is the sort of the care and preservation of pipe organs. And there's a technology which is kind of interesting because the expected lifetime of such an instrument is hundreds or thousands of years. And in fact, in Europe, there are instruments that are playable today that are, close to 1,000 years old. And it puts a whole new perspective on how you take care of things, how you build them, how you document them, because at the end of the day, what you're trying to save and preserve is a sound, which is an extremely ephemeral kind of thing, and it's kind of difficult to do. And there's all kinds of documentation and measurements that need to be taken. But the thing that really destroys something that's meant to last for a long time is a change in the place where it's located. Typically, a fire or a flood, something like that, is what will cause the destruction of the thing that you want to keep. So that's why we're emphasizing that no matter what type of data it is that you want to save, you've got to be diverse about where you put it, and they've got to be a fair distance apart, and you've got to make sure that you document how to retrieve it as well as store it. So it's a hell of a challenge if you're looking for more than a couple of years. Companies have to worry about 7 years worth of data. In some other places, it's just an incredibly longer time. So back to that.
In the case of storing a instrument that can be played 1,000 years later, yes, that physical object, properly stored and saved, can preserve most of its characteristics. I accept that. I think as we study the Wikipedia reference that you just talked about, George, on how flash drive works, is my guess that when we finally study it enough, get down to the molecular level at what each individual bit really is, it is my guess that it might be a voltage on a capacitor, each individual bit. And maybe it's a voltage on four capacitors that are used in some kind of a network of capacitors. But it's a voltage on a capacitor is the apparently non-volatile bit of storage. And now, can we get enough capacitance and picofarads and enough leakage resistance in gigatera ohms so that the rate of leakage of that voltage, which I think is the real bit, I may be wrong on this one, over the amount of time with cosmic ray exposures and with the error correcting codes that are in place, I think there's a predictable bit error rate that flash drive is going to give me 10 years from now, and I'm not convinced that even with the protocol problem being solved, that you can guarantee that that flash drive stands a chance of being there in 100 years. And can a magnetic tape be guaranteed for 100 years? I'm skeptical of that. Wesley's got a question. Go ahead, Wesley.
Antoxia, I have sent you the email, and also Glenn got one, and it starts with the words, this is kind of shocking, dependency of existence of biological life from waves. And we were talking about memory, about capacitors, we didn't spoke about science, neuropsychologist Warren McLeod has a large article of biosystems, liquid crystals, and potential effects of natural artificial electromagnetic fields, EMF. And he actually states that the life, terrestrial biological life, depends on LC forms. My understanding is that, I mean, if you look at this, let me jump. That you were always the person who was sending for the radio waves as not being harmful, and all of these people fighting for removing the antennas, you were actually opposing their actions, which was actually understandable. But in this article, the doctor proposed that origins of terrestrial biological life may have required the presence of EMF flux or different waveforms and intensities to prevalence an interaction with the living cells and variety of biological liquid crystal LC forms, which provide fundamental support and detection mechanism to explain quantum level sensitivity. He states that lipid molecules of biological membranes exist in the LC state and provide matrix for membrane proteins to perform their functions.
The fucking idiot.
And not only lipids, but also major classes of compounds, proteins, carbohydrates, and nucleic acids exist in LC phases under well-defined conditions. Therefore, it is very important to know that properties of LC materials in order to better understand biological process has a lot to do with regular the artificial electromagnetic fields, EMF. And he also said that the planetary resonator hypothesis and wave interaction are the key determinant of biological structure, EMF flux, as information that he put in the field, are two mechanisms for ELF, extremely low frequency, and he used the term Precambrian. ERF may have supplied intense fields to environmental factors of catalytic energy sources for being an evolution factor of the living systems. My question to the doctors that are present in here is, how would they find that article? It's a very, very long explanation, and then at the end of it is supported by the number of three pages references of the scientific data. Back to you.
I'm of the strong belief that electromagnetic energy of a radio form, wireless energy, at reasonable power levels, like 1 milliwatt per square centimeter or less, or 1.6 watts per kilogram of specific absorption rate or less, has only an extremely minor heating effect that has ever been confirmed in reasonable laboratories and with peer-reviewed journals and so on. So only a small thermal effect is all it can do. Cosmic rays, for instance, are without a doubt at some particular rate creating a genetic error. And there's a whole philosophy, let me drop. There's a whole philosophy that a number of smart people have developed that said, yes, cosmic rays interfering with genetic material and DNA have created a significant number of errors, or you could call it an error rate, on all living organisms where the reproduction is dependent on DNA. And there's a tremendous number of people who have a belt of, I won't say tremendous, there's a good number of people who have developed a philosophy that the rate of error made the mutations that made the variations that allowed evolution to take place, that if the genetic material was perfect, and if the offspring of each two parents was always 100% predictable, that there would have been so little variation from generation to generation that you wouldn't have had evolution of one species into another. Eohippus, that a small animal that was the size of a dog, would never have become a horse, for instance. So, although in each individual generation, the errors in the genetic code created by cosmic rays, among other things, although it seems to be a disadvantage, in the big picture, in the survival of life on this planet, the evolution of life on this planet, the evolution of the continuous survival of the fittest, improvement of the gene pool, that this seemingly disadvantage of these errors created by all of these radiation sources, these ionizing radiation sources, in the big picture, is a benefit. There's a significant number of people who believe that. I think they might be right. KQRIW, anyone got any opinions on this?
Well, what he states is that evolution of ultra-sensitive protein, LC, transceiver biocommunications mechanism for extremely low frequencies. The Precambrian Earth may have supplied the intense fields as environmental factors and catalytic energy sources for beginning and evolution of living systems. What actually he states is that our organism exists in LC state and provide matrix for membrane proteins to perform their functions. Back to you.
Yeah, I've got to ask you a question now, Wesley. In the article you're reading right now, where it talks about LC state and it's talking about biological organisms, in your and my radio vocabulary, LC means inductor capacitor. When I'm talking about a biological organism, does LC have the same meaning? Over to you, Wesley.
Based on that paper that is supported by 3 pages of scientific data, it states that LC state exists in our organism, that all of the communication is being done by and for the LC state devices in within our organism. Not only lipids, but other major classes of compounds, proteins, carbohydrates, and nucleic acids exist in LC phases under well-defined conditions. And it is very important to know that properties of LC materials, in order to understand biological processes, has a lot to do with the artificial electromagnetic field properties. It doesn't state about how intensively bad is to be exposed to the electromagnetic field. He does compare the electromagnetic field mechanism to the mechanism of our organism. Back to you.
I'm getting the impression that that article is very biochemistry oriented. And I'm thinking in that context, L and C, Lima and Charlie, have a very different meaning to a biochemist compared to an electronic engineer. I wonder if we're misinterpreting the word LC, the abbreviation LC. Does LC have another meaning to a biochemist?
Doesn't. Just open up that article. Probably one, third from the bottom. And it is being named... This is kind of shocking. Dependency of existence of biological life from waves. And then is the http://www.stellarshocker.com documents consciousness 15 PDF. Now, at first I was thinking that... this is any kind of non-professional material, but then I look at this, these pages beneath that, and it is quite interesting. All of these pages of the scientific data and number of universities, people working over the years with that subject. But,
I hear you. I'm going to have to study it. I have to look at it tomorrow. I'm going to have to leave you guys, but let me give all of you guys a challenge, and that is, between now and next week, can you really tell me at the molecular level what is going on with any of these so-called non-volatile memory schemes that are used with computers? Is it or is it not a voltage on a capacitor? We can talk about the latching states. We can talk about the change of states. We can use all of these fancy words. But what is it really? Is it or is it not a voltage on the equivalent of a capacitor? And if so, can we talk about the rate of discharge of that capacitor and whether or not the data at some bit error rate is going to be lost over some number of years? That's a challenge. Right now, I don't know if we have it, if we have, because of all of the fancy vocabulary that the memory engineering companies use, I'm not convinced that we're sure what is really the state that's being stored on these non-volatile memories, which have no battery backup. I got to leave you guys. Be kind to each other. This was TechNet number 1,343. And maybe I got to go to 3.5 floppies, Mel. Maybe you got the right idea. K2KEY, if you're still there. K2RIW, go ahead, Mel.
Dick, before you go, it is MOS, metal oxide silicon. And you can easily look that one up, and if you'd like more detail on that. But that is the area where charge is stored, KC2QIQ. And 73s, have a good one.
Yeah, but when you're storing charge, aren't you storing a voltage on a capacitor? Isn't that what the charge is, Glenn?
Absolutely. It's being charged, and if the Q is balanced properly, that can be there a real long time, Dick.
But every capacitor has an RC time constant of rate of discharge. Now, if we can calculate that the rate of discharge is 1 over E in a million years, that's great. I don't think it's going to be quite that good. But maybe Mel's got the right idea with his 3.25 floppies. K2KEY, K2RIW. Go ahead, Mel.
Dick, the answer is in the equation Q is equal to CV. If as the voltage goes lower, what happens to Q?
That could be a misinterpretation. We'll discuss that next week. Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, well, good discussion for next week. Very interesting, and yes, I'd like to know if anyone could give us a definitive answer. How long will anything magnetized, voltage-wise, or voltage storage type of device, what? How long? And, well, I've got this, I can say. I've got some of those old floppies, those 5.5, and every so often, I've dug one out that was laying around for, I could say, 30 years, and it still seems to be intact. And but if you want that storage, I got it. A file cabinet. It seems to be, if I write something down on a sheet of paper and file it thick, I think it's going to last, just like we see a lot of things that were printed centuries ago. Still around. 73's, guys. Catch you next week. Have a great week. This is K2KEY.
Good one, N2XCN.
Go ahead, Bill, please.
Glenn, I have a question for you, because you were not present when I was talking about ferroelectric capacitors. They should deal with that stuff, Andrew.
I don't deal with them a lot there, Wesley, but I have a little bit of familiarity with them.
Uh, y- you've got a whole library of the information about them from me, about Telelinks, and there are a few very interesting factors. Frequency response of ferroelectric capacitor in certain frequencies, they are simply flipped and memorized, and they stay at the wave the dipoles at that memory stage. Now, in the certain frequency, the low frequencies, actually they don't retain that stage. They are capable of withholding thousands of volts. Now, the permanent dipole orientation can flow only in megahertz and gigahertz. If we talking about 1 kilohertz, the memory is not retained. The electric capacitor can store more electric energy charge due to the dielectric polarization. And also, in the equation that I was looking in regards to ferroelectric capacitors, it was the term used, elastic energy, and that elastic energy, while the quadrature hysteresis was created, added to dipole interaction, gave combined equals of total energy. Now, what is interesting in the video that I have sent you is the guy show how to make homemade, and this is a doctor of physics, and this is university, I don't remember what it is, what university it is. He showed how he melt and how he make using the heater, make that capacitor, and then how the hysteresis is kind of square-like on the screen of CRT of his oscilloscope, and retain for a certain time. Back to you.
Yeah, basically what's going on there, Wesley, is that that kind of capacitor has a non-linear capacitance with the poster frequency. Typically, if you look at the reactance of a capacitor with frequency, it's relatively linear. And if you look at the low-frequency response of this type of capacitor, that's exactly what you'll see is a linear response until you get to certain frequency ranges. And when you do, then the impedance becomes non-linear. Now, depending on the structure that it's attached to, you can actually, when that impedance changes, you can actually create another chemical effect in parallel to that, in which, like in the case of an LCD, if you wanted to change the color of a display that it's going to read, or the way that the image reads through the LCD, if you apply those frequencies at that state, you can create that impedance, and that will create that state for that piece of structure. I believe that's what you're referring to, but that's well-documented stuff, and in quite a bit in practice today. Back to you, Wesley. KC2QIQ.
Yes, it is very much documented. I was reading the history of ferroelectric materials, and quite impressive. But the thing is that there is a controversy that non-linear ferromagnetic capacitor in non-linear process has the arranged conditions which contain two stages at the same very time. One of them is low current and high voltage, the same hysteresis, and the other one is high voltage and low current. Now, the thing is that if you use the mixture and you are able to take all of these stages at the same time, mix them together, then you create you are able to extract the power without creating back EMF. Back to you.
Yeah, that's basically how it works. I mean, in general, you're going to apply a frequency It's going to create the nonlinear reaction, and then what you're doing is instead of that EMF coming back, what you're basically doing is you're transferring the energy in that nonlinear state to create another function. And in the case of a display, you're using it to change the configuration of the LCD to create a color change or a black to white kind of change in a, you know, depending on the display of activity. So depending on the signal that you're going to put in there, you're basically creating a load, so to speak, in that nonlinearity that creates some work that's being done, and that work turns out to be a display change. Does that make more sense? Back to you, Wesley.
The problem that I have with it, that you said basically this is how it works. The thing is that basically there is none of the professional bodies that could agree with your statement or my statement at all. I have sent you also the information about the two scientists that were trying to patent the idea and they were punished severely, and there's another doctor of science who was helping them to write the patent for that was actually facing lawsuits and the financial difficulties because of that area. So you agreed into the conspiracy theory right now, and to agree.
Why you sound like fucking idiot?
Well, what's happening there, Wesley, is like this. It's something that already works, kind of a thing. And I think what you're finding out is that the way that people are trying to document its actual, you know, physical action down to the most minute levels, there's some levels of disagreement. But certainly nobody is disagreeing with the function, if you follow what I'm saying. Casey 2, QIQ.
There is a manufacturer that does production of square-like hysteresis ferroelectric capacitors for the Department of Navy and for U.S. Navy, and one of the people was trying to purchase this capacitor from them, and they told he was told that they are only for the military use and not for the civilian market. Now, the ferroelectric capacitor is not a classified element, and my attention was because of the controversy that is there. Now, I spent a lot of time trying to research all of this link, and most of them sounds very much professional and non-controversial, but there are quite few, and there are big names underneath of that put in doubt certain areas of science of the ferroelectric capacitors, and in particular, they agree to what you just said, and I was saying that this is a conspiracy theory. Back to you.
I kind of know where you're coming from with that, but I kind of look at it from a different direction. In the open commercial market, let's say, so to speak, you have things that are patentable, and they're patentable for a period of time. And then after a while, there are other things that are just, you know, it's almost like freeware, so to speak. But what will happen is you get another situation where, okay, the basic idea is something you really can't patent because it's kind of just out there for everyone to use. But let's say somebody pays for the development of something in which they use their dollars. Let's say it's a government, and they use tax dollars to pay for development of a product. And that product is just made for them. For the people who are producing it, they have a responsibility to make sure that you know, the people who pay for that development, they have gratis to it, and not necessarily everybody else is supposed to know about it, you know, because it was already paid for by somebody else, unless somebody else wants to do their own development and use their own nickel, but to use you know, the money that other people have used to develop it sometimes creates a bit of a problem, if you know what I'm saying. KC2, QIQ.
And to Exgen. Okay, thank you for that explanation. So I understand that this particular phenomenon was possibly restricted by somebody else, and then trying to patent that idea was against the business of that somebody else, and actually this effect of mixing these two elements of that very much square-like hysteresis is not to be shown on the commercial market, at least for a while. And to Exia.
Yeah, fortunately, Wesley, that happens in a lot of areas of technology, and the good news is many times that once people kind of know it and they realize that they can't do it or patent it or whatever, is they come up with a better idea. So what you got to do is just wait for next year's better idea. On that note, I got to get out of here. Always a pleasure, and I want to say 73s for now. KC2, QIQ, catch everybody down the log, and have a good week.
I see you, Wesley, you fucking idiot.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate your comment, Glenn, as always, and I wish you a very good night. And to Exian.
You glad Wesley is on TechNet so we can listen to Wesley for 6 hours?
And to Exian. Well, life of the cockroaches. I would love to talk about it with John, but unfortunately, he's not able to talk about it. I can remind one thing. The cockroach that has his head cut off can live for 1 month without a head. The only way to disable the cockroach is cut his antenna as the cockroach has two eyes on the two antennas. So when you cut the antenna, the cockroach is no longer alive, no longer able to see. And you can simply kill the cockroach and to exit.
You're looking for John, KC2, Wesley's gay boyfriend? Did you want to suck his cock, or did you want him to fuck you up the ass, Wesley? Do you prefer, you idiot? You glad that Wesley joined Limark so we can hear him on the repeater more often? You glad Wesley is on TechNet so we can listen to this idiot for 6 fucking hours every Sunday? Are you happy about that? Anybody who enjoys listening to Wesley for 6 fucking hours on the TechNet, raise your hands, please. Wesley, your boyfriend John is not here to defend you. Maybe we can call him KC2WGP, KC2WGP, KC2 Wesley's gay boyfriend, KC2 Wesley's gay boyfriend, are you there? You need to come to rescue the Wesley. Wesley, your boyfriend is not there, that's so sad.
The time is 1 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
Where the Grand Poobah plays. You're looking for dead bodies with that D5000? We were not at Gilgo. Sorry. And westbound Ocean Parkway is shut down from 7 a.m. until 4 p.m. today to search for more bodies. Hoo-ah!
Say, cadaver dogs.
Good morning, Rich. John, does your D5000 have a single or a dual memory card slot? Curious about something.
Single memory card slot.
Okay. Then you can't answer the question that I'm trying to figure out, because mine has a dual card slot, and I was curious if I could do something with it. I'll find out when I get the body. Richie, over to you.
Were you curious about Gary? I'm curious about he's curious about that you're curious about now.
Curious too. Are you curious? Yellow. Bi curious.
Metro curious.
All right, I'll give you your answer. Since it has a dual memory card slot, I know you can dedicate one card for stills and one card for movies, but I was curious if I could record the same image in two different formats on the separate cards. That would be handy in case I wanted to do some fancy stuff later. Richie?
Well, what different formats does it save in that you would be saving in different formats simultaneously to two separate cards?
I think the answer is yes, and you're talking about a RAW versus a JPEG image.
Yep, and RAW is the best way to shoot because when you put it into software, you can really manipulate that picture if you shoot in RAW. And RAW takes up a lot of memory.
Good morning, Dumper. And that's exactly what I was thinking of. Have one dedicated as RAW, the other one dedicated as JPEG. That's 16 gigs on each card. And as long as I clear the cards after each photo shoot, I shouldn't run out of room. Store them separately on the computer, one to manipulate, one to have just a quick snapshot. Dumper, take up a full turn and hand it over to Richie.
Good morning, Gary. Good morning, John. Good morning, Richie.